In a letter dated 8 July 1972, Srila Prabhupada warned a devotee that unless he came to the platform of full conviction, to the point of seeing Krishna face to face by standing before him as his eternal servant, he would continue to have difficulties of mind. Compare the program Srila Prabhupada recommended to this devotee with the method Lord Krishna revealed to Brahmadev. Srila Prabhupada's letter of 8 July 1972. Try to always study our books and see our philosophy from different lights of directions. Right? That's the vichar. So that's how, like here, we have four different vritis on different aspects to look at. And that's the whole idea, is that it's not that we've covered it once. The modern context is you've covered the subject once, you don't cover it again. Otherwise, it's considered inefficient. You're not moving, you're not this. But the Veda concept is cover it from many, many different angles, because then you actually understand it properly. So that repetition becomes important because you see different aspects. So then you see when it adjusts, then you can see it from a different side. It broadens how you look at it. Otherwise, we think it does one thing, but it can do so many things. Right? Is that, yes? Yes, yes. But the realization will come by contemplating and practicing what you've heard. Right? So when you have more ways of looking at it, therefore more practices, therefore greater realization. Okay. Try to always study our books and see our philosophy from different lights of directions. Become convinced yourself of this knowledge, and without a doubt all your difficulties of mind will disappear forever and you will see Krishna face to face. Right? So that astikya, right, becoming fixed, is the real point. You've heard, you see it from different directions, you become convinced yourself, right, of this knowledge. Then your difficulties will go away. Difficulties come because we think there's something else. There's something else that's still there. There's some little bit that we know. That, okay, the reason that I wasn't happy was because I didn't do it like this, I did it like that. So we try to make that little adjustment, right? Then we again, it didn't work again. So, well, no, okay, well, make that slight adjustment again, you know? Does that make sense? You know, we just keep doing it until we find out that eventually it's none of that works. So we can either go on speculating like that for a long time or be convinced by the Shastra. So that combination of being convinced and practicing, then that gives us very good results. Yes?
Or just the demonic way of going about things, when you don't get the satisfaction, you just make a new plan?
I mean, you have that idea, but the devotee is using it in connection with Krishna. So, but the mind coming up with it, that's the part that's not good. You know what I'm saying? So the devotee's trying different ways to serve Krishna. It's not that he has a plan, therefore it's demoniac. Plan means is that you have a plan, it's the plan that's going to make it work, not Krishna's involvement, the knowledge about Krishna. That's where that we would bring the demoniac. Is that we come up with a new idea, that's because the mind is materialistic. Right?
Yeah, thinking more conditioned souls.
Yes, the conditioned souls. But within that, in other words, you can take those who are liberated, that's pious, and those who are conditioned are impious. But within the impious, then those who are willing to follow Shastra, that's called pious. Those who are not, that's impious. Right? Does that make sense? Those who are within there not following the Vedas are trying to be nice, then those are called pious, and the ones that don't care, that's, you know, universally impious. Right? And then of those, the ones that support their friends and are there for them are called pious, and the ones that don't, then they are not, really not pious. Does that make sense? So it's all relative. But when it's connected to Krishna, then it's absolute. So it is, because in this way, with the devotee, you won't call it the demoniac mentality. But it's because of materialism. Because their materialism is less, you're trying to get rid of it completely. The demon is trying to increase his materialism. But his idea is, I wasn't materialistic enough. That's why it didn't work. Right? Okay. And then Srimad Bhagavatam 2936. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. Right. You see the point? So he's bringing out is that by studying and seeing at all these different angles that you're trying to apply it, that means then that is all times, all space, all circumstances, directly and indirectly. Yes, but it's just using, it's bringing out the detail. Because here he's bringing out the aspect of the study. You study it from different aspects, but what are those lights of direction? That's circumstances, space, time, directly, indirectly. In a sense. So like that. So like you said, they're saying the same thing, but one brings out one detail enough. That's what the acharyas are doing. Each one's bringing out a certain aspect. In other words, if one acharya has already brought it out, the next acharya doesn't focus on that. He brings out that aspect that you may not have caught. Right? Yes.
We see that in those who are not in traditional culture, the more aspects of the roof work, the more mental speculation they get into.
Yes. That's why it has to be connected to Krishna. So. You know, it means you do have the element of keeping it simple. Just like, let us say, you go, Matt, let us say, you go into the Bengali sari shop. Okay? How many saris are they comfortable with you pulling out and looking at?
Any amount.
Now let's say we go into a Marwari sari shop. How many are they comfortable with? Okay. After about two or three, they want you to make a decision, because their idea is the more that I give, the more you'll become confused, which is true of that mentality. The North Indian mentality is you show more, they get confused. But when you're dealing with the East or the South, the more you show, the more you can make a decision, because you thought, oh, these are nice, but this one's nicer, I'll take this. Because otherwise, I might have not taken one that I would have wanted. Well, the North Indian is, they don't think that far. You understand? They wouldn't think maybe there was more, but the Bengali will. So that's just the difference. So it's just that they're comfortable with that. So you do have the aspect that more can confuse, but that's only in someone who's not thoughtful. But someone who's not thoughtful, generally they're not into studying and looking from different angles, so the problem doesn't come up. But if one likes to speculate, right, he's into jnana, his conditioning is jnana, then he may confuse himself by this. Because that confusion means there's more opportunity for discussion. Right? But not conclusion. But those who want a conclusion, then it doesn't matter how much you study, then it just makes it easier to make a conclusion. Does that make sense? So it's just your intent. If your intent is to please Krishna, then it will work out. If your intent's not to please Krishna, then maybe you're just staying right here. Still, it's just staying right here. The wind is such that it just floats right here. It's been there for like 30 seconds.
That's Krishna's energy, right? It's so amazing. And this is just a millionth of a millionth portion, so you can imagine what the spiritual world's like. You can't see it? You can see it?
Yeah.
I saw, now I can't see it.
Okay, yeah, it's over here. It's just somehow or another how the fan's blowing. It's the air. It's just one hair is floating in the air. Yeah. So like that, Krishna floats the planets. Right? He's just floating them in air. So how the air moves, then it floats the planets. Okay. It is so hard. Yes.
It's just interesting. So the Marwaris and Bengalis, what about Westerners? How narrow are they?
West, you get everything, kind of. It means, in other words, like in India, you get the whole wide range. But that's within the pious. So those persons not having enough piety to maintain the birth in India, but enough to maintain human, then become grown around the world. So in other words, it's just one of the mentalities. So you'd have to say what it's going to be from whatever it's from. And they're going to be similar. As we said, is you take east here, you go farther to the northeast. When you go really far up in the east, then you start to get the oriental look. And so that just keeps getting more and more oriental as you go. And if you get them to Punjab, they have that heavy, you know, kind of gruffy, you know, look, the big beards. And the farther west you go, the more they start to look like that. You know, so it's just, you get that kind of aspect, you know. And then you have the aspect of the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas and Shudras fleeing from India when Parasaram did his tour, right? So then from that, then you get that Kshatriya element or that fighting spirit in the Africans and the Chinese, you know, or the Orientals and in the Europeans. So you kind of take that and... But basically because you have more speculation in the way of... Because there is no standard, so it just keeps moving. Right? At least for your general. It's the people who are working on principles, they understand the balance and everything, so they can make it work. So it's just a matter of how bold or conservative they want to be. But then your common person, they just go by the waves, so you don't want to show them too much, but at the same time as they, you have to give the options, you know. So you have both. They come, you know, in other words, if you go around the corner and there are, you know, 50 different kinds of cereal, you become confused, you know. So just because of the confusion, you'll just pick one, you know. It may be the wrong one, but you'll pick one. You know, and after a while, then you become adjusted and sophisticated, and now you are able to distinguish between the 50 varieties of exactly the same thing. You try to create because there's no standard, but you just have to see the audience. It's a matter of by giving something more, they become inspired. So as you speak, you just have to see how they respond. Like I remember one time I came across that, you know, the four different aspects of anartha nivritti, right? You know, you have being critical, you have weakness of heart, materialistic taste, and aparad. And then it had four subdivisions in each. And so I saw that, I became inspired, because now it's like you know what's there. You know, here it is. These are all the anarthas, all the four main categories with the four subdivisions. So these 16 aspects, that's just what you have to look for. Right? Now you know what anartha is, right? So then in great happiness, you know, and inspiration, I brought that up in one temple after that. And then as soon as I got up 16, then it was like, in their mind, before there was only one. It was anartha that I had to get rid of one thing. Okay, that's easy enough. Now I got to get rid of 16 things. You know, it's like everybody just became, you know, disheartened. So then, you know, in that audience, you keep it simple, keep it light. You don't bring up technical. But in other ones, the more technical, you know, it's so simple, you know, like that. You get up, bring out the technical, then they become inspired. So you just have to see what works, more technical, less technical, you know, more authoritative, less authoritative, you know, just whatever works for the audience. Does that make sense? Because, as Prabhupada mentions, there are mixes. So that means you're going to get a whole wide variety of things, but which one will be prominent any one time, you don't know. That's the problem with mixes, no stability. So the same person in one situation then will act in one way, and a different will act differently. There won't be any standard. You know, like that. Is that
yes.
Yeah, so you just have to see. Did that make sense to anybody else? Just make sure that it wasn't two. What is it? You had two of it? Esoteric instead of implicit instead of explicit. Okay. So is it so hard to follow that in verse 36? Lord Krishna, having instructed Brahma every step of the way, now assures at all times, places, and circumstances, Brahmaji, by keeping alive a firm faith to always hear from the spiritual master, can keep his param brahma nishtam above the anartha level of saguna bhakti. The answer is made. Okay. So you understand, because it has its both ways in all these. There's always the both aspects that is being brought out. Right? You have the aspect of, okay, at all times, all places, you must search for it, but it also means that if you apply this, means at all times, all places, all circumstances, you can see Krishna. Right? The devotee's practice will always see Krishna in all times, all places, all circumstances, directly and indirectly. That's because he's made the attempt to do that. Then Krishna is pleased, so he's rewarded with that. So you have both aspects. Does that make sense? One is we don't see Krishna in anything, it's all ours. So we should see him like that. But then there's the other aspect, is that the devotee will see him like that. Right? We have our values, they're not connected to Krishna, so they're an illusion. And we know that connecting them to Krishna, that's what will make it work. Then you have the aspect that he will see all his values in connection with Krishna. Does that make? He will see the person in everything. He will be able to appreciate Krishna in everything, but at the same time beyond. Because if he's in everything, then, you know, it's Krishna's fault. No, but he's beyond. So it still leaves that it's our fault. But it's not our fault in that, you know, we have to feel bad about ourselves. This is just the way it works. You behave badly, you get bad results. You adjust it, it works good. Does that make sense? So in other words, right now I can adjust it and make it work properly. It doesn't mean I won't still be getting bad results from previous bad endeavor. But what it does mean is that I'll get the satisfaction of properly doing things and pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Because otherwise we think as soon as I do it right, I must get good results. But there's always a lag. Right? You've done things in the past, it takes time for the fruit to come. So now I'm doing it right, so that means in the future the fruit will be good, but right now it'll still be bad because it's coming from the past. And what Krishna likes, he can give good now. But the point is if he gives all good now, then we'll sit back and think I'm great. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
That's one example, I forgot the name of the king. He made some sacrifice to become an emperor of the world, and then it was interesting that he continued to make the sacrifices just to stay in the position of the emperor of the world.
Okay.
Which is kind of...
It's rare.
Yeah, because you're the emperor, that's it.
Yeah, so most it would do. So that means he's more smart. That will just be Sukriti from previous life. Because otherwise in India it's known that's how it works. So then he, you know, something's left over. Yes.
So this connection is saguna bhakti, that you see everything in connection to Krishna?
Yes, saguna means with qualities.
right? That here, you can say like that, or you can he can keep his param brahmanishtam above the anartha level of saguna bhakti. Or here it means saguna bhakti is below, is with anarthas, means saguna means with material quality. So mixed devotional service. So here saguna would mean another term for a karma misra, jnana misra, you know, misra bhakti. But it means that then he'll be able to see everything, and saguna means Krishna's qualities rather than saguna means the qualities of this world. Does that have some sense? Yeah. The answer is made very clear by Srila Prabhupada in a lecture given in Bombay, 13th January 1973. Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Amalam Puranam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. Srimad Bhagavatam is Amalam Puranam. Amala means spotless. There are 18 Puranas. 6 Puranas for the Sattvic people, those who are in the mode of goodness. There are 3 qualities of the material nature, Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, Tamaguna. The living entities, or the Jivatmas, they are in this material world for sense gratification. Anyone, beginning from Lord Brahma down to the small ant, or microscopic insect. Everyone, so in other words, germs are considered insects. Every living entity has come here in this material world for gratifying their senses. The Prema Vivarta, an authorized book by one of the disciples of Lord Chaitanya, he says, it is in Bengali, Krishna Bhulya Jiva Bhoga Vachana Kare Pashate Maya Tare Japatiya Dhare. As soon as we desire to enjoy, because constitutionally we are not enjoyer, we are enjoy. We are not predominator, but we are predominated. That is our position. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Jivara Srup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. A real position is to remain eternal servant of Krishna. People learn it simply by hearing, Shruti, Shrotram, Shrotriyam, Tad Vigyan Artam Sadgurum Eva Abhigachet Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Shrotriyam means the guru must be an expert who has heard from his bona fide spiritual master. That's Shrotriyam, not Saukram. Saukram means generation by seminar. And Shrotriyam, generation by hearing from the bona fide spiritual master. Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. After hearing, one must be firmly fixed up in Brahma Jnana, Brahmanishtam. This is called Shrotriyam. So, Dvija Bandhu means who has not perfected his knowledge by hearing from the bona fide source. He is called Dvija Bandhu. Yes.
Shrotriyam, Shukram, and
Dvija
Bandhu, these are all terms for
Brahma. Can be, but Dvija Bandhu can be, but it's also Dvija Bandhu can mean all the Dvijas. Right? But the what interest? Saukram means that they're born in that family. So naturally, by being born in the family, being a combination of the consciousness and the parents, you would expect that they would have a similar nature. But just because they do doesn't mean that they shouldn't be applying it. So when they apply that nature, then you can say he's of that nature. Right? The parents are Kshatriyas, they have a child, then it's natural that he should be a Kshatriya. But he still has to apply it. Then you can say, now he's a Kshatriya. If he doesn't apply it, then he's not, you wouldn't call him a Kshatriya. Then he's a Brahma Bandhu or a Kshatriya Bandhu. Right? Because their Saukram is not enough. Right? It's just like I planted the seed and I have a plant, but until it gives fruit, then what's the meaning? Okay, there's tons of eggplant plants out there, but not one eggplant. So is there any use to it? Do I say this is a good eggplant crop? No. Yeah. You hope. Yeah. And Shrotriya means that you've heard. So that's the point. That's the difference. Means the Sokram who has heard, then he becomes Brahmanishtam. But if he hasn't heard and hasn't applied, because when we say heard means he's heard and applied. If someone just hears, it goes in one ear, out the other, then that's not good. Right? If it goes in and there's like I've told the story of, yeah.
Terracotta?
Yeah.
So the point is if it goes in one ear and out the other, then that really is no brain. If it goes in one ear and out the mouth is gossip, then that also is basically not so important. You know, at least a little more active. But if it goes in and sticks, then you could say this is good. Because then you contemplate, so therefore you apply it. So that's Shrotriya. Because otherwise, how do you get Brahmanishtam? Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam, someone who's become fixed in Brahman by hearing from the bona fide authority. Right? So that's there. But if he hasn't, so Dvijabandha, who has not perfected his knowledge by hearing from the bona fide source, he has a, that's why someone, let's say, born in these Dvija families, then they have the potential. You know, just like someone's born in a devotee family, they're not automatically counted as a devotee. Right? They're a devotee, but they're not considered sampradaya. Right? So there's samanya. Means general devotee. Means that they're there and they're taking up. Otherwise, why are they born there? But the point is they become serious as a devotee when they make that commitment to devotional service themselves. Right? Then you see, like Prahlad Maharaj, he made that commitment. So now you say, he's a devotee. But otherwise, in the family, then, you know, they're there, they're doing devotional activities because you're doing. If you weren't doing, they'd also not do. So they're not specific devotees. Does that make sense? So that's the thing with the Dvijabandha. They have Dvijabandha. They have the potential, but until they actually hear and apply, right, then they're called, you know, Brahmanishtam. Right? So when they have Brahmagyan, then they get Brahmanishtam. So that's the point being made here. Right, so therefore these six Puranas, therefore the sattvic people, and so of the Vishuddha Sattva, that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. These other modes are for other people. So if you've heard from proper source, then you become Brahmanishtam. If you haven't, then you'll be controlled by the other modes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Interesting. One of his writing techniques is he ends with a quote. So it just establishes that. He's already explained it, and then he gives that. Okay, Vritti, part 4. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.36 is Krishna's own hermeneutic conclusion to Chatur-shloki Bhagavatam. Right? So hermeneutic means how you interpret something. So how you interpret the other three verses is through the fourth verse. The student of the Bhagavat course is not likely to be familiar with the competing hermeneutic theories proposed by European academians like Schleiermacher. Okay. Dilthey, Hirsch. Here's another one.
Hirsch.
And then?
Heidegger.
And then the last one?
Gadamer.
So somehow or another they all seem to be German. They always seem to start the trouble, right? Like that. But because they're thoughtful. That's the thing, is they're really, whatever they do, they focus. So if they get into academics, they're really, because they're the first ones, you could say, in Europe that actually saw that there was something unique about Sanskrit and the Sanskrit philosophies. So they took it up and made it popular until then we have to move over a couple of countries until the British decided that this is very un-Christian and therefore then tried to turn it around that it's bad. Like that. So then, you know, yes. But just knowing the simple dictionary definition of hermeneutics dictionary definition of hermeneutics will be of sufficient use to us, right? Because otherwise they have all kinds of fancy ways to explain it. The science and methodology of interpretation, especially of scriptural text, right? So that's good enough. Now, taking that, adding on to it another few hundred words,
and then mixing it up, then you'll get what these other academicians have said. Or academians, he's used. What does the word hermeneutics bring to the table of our discussion of the Chaturshloki Bhagavat? Personally, the only thing that interests me about the word is the mystery its Greek origin reveals. In ancient times, a herma was a pillar dedicated to the deity of Hermes, the Olympian messenger, and thus the knower of all the secrets of the gods. Right? Because as a messenger, he's carrying all the messages. He knows everything. And also the one thing that's probably for his advantage, he's swifter than anybody else, because knowing all the secrets, if anyone gets upset, he can outrun them. Right? You know, so. Very good combination. Right? Considering this, you know, in other words, a tortoise, if he had been the messenger, he would have been in trouble, right? Considering this, what do Vaishnavas have to do with hermeneutics anyway? Our interest is in Krishnaneutics, right? Not yet. The study of how Lord Krishna is actually the secret of all secrets hidden within every Vedic text, and the deity of all deities, right? In other words, there's a pillar upon which it's based. So that's your point that's coming up. Yes?
Can we say that according to the definition of hermeneutics, whatever acharyas do, that's hermeneutics?
Yes. That's our hermeneutics. Yes.
But so that's why he says?
Why he says what?
Oh, interesting. I mean,
means in other words, in Krishna, it means in other words, here say the science and methodology of interpretation. So now you could come up with your own science and own methodology. So that's what all these other philosophers have done. They all have their unique, that's how they're a Muni, they have their unique hermeneutics. Right? So it's just like, let's say you're talking to somebody, right? You're having a very pleasant conversation. Then you hit a buzzword. Now what happens to the conversation? It goes all, you know, yeah, something goes weird. Why? Because now they're interpreting that word in their own way, which is different how you're using it. And now the whole discussion changes, how the interaction, everything changes. That's hermeneutics. How do you, like if we say, it's just like, yeah, cult. You know, what does that mean? Oh, cult is bad. You know, so is yogurt bad? That's a culture. You know, you're applying the cult, that is a culture. So therefore, if that's the thing, then that's bad. You know, you're culturing your yoga asanas. You know, that would be bad. You're culturing that being peaceful. So all these aspects are cult. Cultish. You know what I'm saying? What do you wear for the yoga, you know, in the yoga studio?
Yoga pants.
Yeah, yoga pants and that, or track pants and all that. But you don't want to get too the, you know, thick, like a sweatshirt kind of stuff. That was, okay, that was before peak. But now you have all kinds of nice fashion house sweatpants and stuff like that. So is that not a cult? They all wear the same thing. You know what I'm saying? They talk the same way, expect the same. Like, you know, like I said, we're at this one yoga studio and we're doing seminars there. And they divided it, and they, you know, they have different areas, but they gave one half for us and another half for the others and didn't want us to go on the other side. Right? And so there I am talking to, you know, these other temple presidents in front of the receptionist. And we're talking management and dealing with, you know, establishing authority and all these heavy things and all that. But according to Shastra, the receptionist couldn't figure out what's going on. So, and she's thinking, and these guys are yogis? They're supposed to be, you know, peace. No, no, don't worry. They said, oh, no, but be peaceful, be, you know, try to work together. That's what they're expecting. No, no, you have to establish the authority. The Shastra said, it's just like, oh, what kind of yogis are these? You know, so that was the... Yes, so that's hermeneutics. So they have their own interpretation. So we have ours. So it's Krishnaneutics. It means Krishna establishes that we basically couldn't care less of the hermeneutics of the world. It doesn't matter how popular it is, because it changes every 6 months anyway. Like now I heard you don't say spin doctoring, you just say spin now. Because spin doctoring is now, you know, it sounds like you're too involved, and you just spin it now.
You know, before it was, oh, now we have to spin doctor this. You know, now it's just we have to spin this. You know, and after a while, that'll become bad. Oh, we have to turn it, or, you know, we have to, you know, rotate it, you know. You know. You know, yes, we have to call in our rotationist. You know. You know. He's a rotationator. Rotation engineer. You know what I'm saying? It just keeps changing because it's the same. That's the whole thing. So that's the problem. While Krishna's hermeneutic doesn't change. It's absolute truth. It doesn't change. Now, what words we use in terms will do that for the person, but not because that hermeneutics are of value. It's just that that's how you get the person to understand. We couldn't care less that what is their philosophy. What we care about is the soul that is conditioned by this philosophy. Therefore, we speak the absolute truth in a way that that conditioned soul can appreciate it. That's what we're doing. But it's not that their view is important. You know, oh no, but everybody's view is important. Who said everybody's view is important? If it's in line with Krishna's view, it's important. If it's not in line with Krishna's view, it's absolutely not important. No, but you have to be heard. Yeah, so the baby wants to speak also. Let's bring him in. He wants full attention. The whole room is there, better. So, you know? And then what's he going to say? I think we all know what he'll say. We don't have to give an example here. Right? So that's the whole point. Right? So these whole things, they come up, they sound so good, so sweet on the ear. They roll off the tongue so easily, but they have absolutely no meaning. So that's the point. So in other words, there's an absolute position, and we're convinced of that, and we're established in that. But when we explain it very nicely. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Right. Yes.
So in Vedic society, is not the same like they say in Nyaya?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Hermeneutics is what your philosophy. Nyaya is the technique of presentation. But how it means, so you could present anything. So in other words, you want to present Vaisheshika. You start with your position. You explain, you give it reasons, you give explanations, you bring in all the other philosophies, you make your conclusion. You want to explain yoga, you do the same thing. That's nyaya. Hermeneutics is how you interpret the word, what its meaning is. How that word would apply. Just like when we say Brahman, we mean Krishna. But for the Mayavadi, Brahman means the Nirguna Brahman. So for us it's Saguna Brahman, which is the effulgence of Krishna. So from understanding in this way, from Saguna Brahman, we remember the Supreme Brahman. Like that, because that's the whole point. Since it's coming from, the electricity is not separate from the generator. Therefore, the electricity means it's a generator. Therefore, if we understand the generator, we automatically have electricity. So if we understand Supreme Brahman, we automatically have Saguna Brahman. Is that?
Yeah.
So that's it. So that will be called Mimamsa. Right? We generally just refer to it as Vedanta because that's what we'll discuss. But Mimamsa is the generic kind of Vedic term, means what is your interpretation? So there's six schools. So there's only six authorized schools of hermeneutics. Now within that you may have branches. Because someone emphasizes this side, someone that side, but their essential core point is all the same. Right? Okay. Our interest is in Krishna nudics. The study of how Lord Krishna is actually the secret of all secrets hidden within every Vedic text, and the deity of all deities, which is precisely what, quote, Supreme Personality of Godhead, end quote, means. Right? The deity of all deities. Right? The Supreme means Personality of Godhead, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or you have Godhead, then you have, that means, Godhead means Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So, Personality of Godhead means Brahma, Bhagavan. And then Supreme Personality, that means Krishna. Vikasa. So it's very specific. It means Supreme Personality of Godhead means Braja Krishna. You can also mean Goloka Krishna. But for us, it specifically means Braja Krishna. Right? Because otherwise, Godhead means the Supreme Lord. Right? And then the personality of Godhead means as a person. So, it is called Parokshavad. Oh, amen. Indeed, there is such a science and methodology of Shastric interpretation. It is called Parokshavad. Srila Prabhupada introduces us to it in his purport of Srimad Bhagavatam 4.28.65. As stated in the Vedas, Paroksha Priya Iva Hi Deva. There are many stories in the Puranas that are intended to interest ordinary men in transcendental subjects, but actually these refer to real facts. They are not to be considered stories without a transcendental purpose. Some of them refer to real historical facts. One should be interested, however, in the real purport of the story. Right? So in other words, the Puranas are giving stories. So not all of them are, all of these, what they're describing are facts. Now whether it's directly the story itself is a fact, or in the story they're telling a story. So it can be the story being told is also a direct story, or it can be that it's an allegory, as in Puranjana. But the point is the allegory of Puranjana is spoken by Narad Muni to Maharaj Prachina Barhisha, who are both real persons, and that activity really happened. Does that make sense? So, but the point is it's not so much as about the facts as it is about what's the point of the story. Right? So it's not whether it's a fact or not, whether I accept it or not. Right? That's one of the modern interpretations. Oh, it's an allegory, so it's not important. No, what's the point? Why did these great personalities, why is Narad Muni describing an allegory? Because there's a point to be learned. So if you don't learn the point, then what's the use? If you remove the importance of this story because it's an allegory, then that means you don't want to know what's the purport. You don't want to know the absolute truth. Indirect instruction is quickly understandable for a common man. Factually, the path of bhakti yoga is the path of hearing directly about the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. But those who are not interested in hearing directly about the activities of the Lord, or who cannot understand them, can very effectively hear such stories and fables as this one narrated by Narad Muni. Right? So in other words, it's talking about this. Right? So if we tell the story, we won't grasp it. But if we tell an allegory, then we can start to grasp it, because it's going to be... Because when I say there's a snake, and then there's so many followers. Right? So what am I going to want to... What am I going to think? What's my question? Right? Who's the snake? Who are the followers? Right? So therefore, then you have the life heirs, you have all these different things, the senses... Right? And so then, oh, okay. You know, so in other words, Paranjana is going out with all these things. That's how he's interacting. You know, the fort is attacked by all these yavanas. What are these yavanas? Old age. Right? Because the shastra is navayavana. You follow the shastra, you remain youthful. You don't follow the shastra, you get old. In fact, you're old as soon as you're born. Right? That makes sense. Yeah. So therefore then the fort of the body is being attacked and is being, you know, degraded. Does that make sense? So we want to know. So that's why very easily then this person who doesn't, because otherwise from the Lord's pastimes, the devotees are all engaging their senses in the Lord's service. But we won't see that. We'll just see the storyline. But the actual mood of the Brajavasis we don't catch. Therefore these things are good.
So, our hearing of this called Parokshavad?
Yes, seems to be. In this verse of chapter 9, canto 2, the Lord tells Brahma to search jigyasyam, this to be inquired, for the absolute truth in two ways, avyayai directly and
vyatireka bhyam, indirectly, as noted from the purport above. The direct method is shravanam kirtanam Vishnu. A valid question at this point is shravanam, yes, I want to hear about Krishna, but from whom shall I hear it? Every bona fide devotee knows the answer from the spiritual master. Shakshat, direct. So this is a quote. Hari Tvena, he is Hari, God, samasta shastrai. It is not that somewhere it is stated, somewhere it is not stated. No, in all Vedic literature, Shakshad Hari Tvena Samasta Shastrai, Upta. Upta means it is said. And Tata Bhavyata Eva Shabdhi. Shabdhi, those who are real devotees, they accept this, right? So that's the point. We'll make the thing, if you're a real devotee, you accept if someone's acting on behalf of the Lord, they are as good as the Lord. That's just the way it is. We say, no, they can't be. We put it in the relative. That's because it's a mundane concept. It's not a real devotee. Simple. Now, this is the direct. Now, some can appreciate this direct, and many cannot. No, but they did this, they did that. It says, upta. It is said, and, what was it? Shabdhi. Those who are on the transcendental platform, they can see it. The others, they can't. It's just like the Dham. You know, it's covered by a small layer of Pravdamaya. So that's what we tend to see. Right? Hayagriva Prabhu goes to Vrindavan with Prabhupada that first time. He comes back, he writes a BTG article, and he's talking about the pigs in Vrindavan and running their snoots through the garbage in the sewers. So that's what he's seeing. You know, so Prabhupada's point is you don't see Vrindavan. You're only seeing the external layer. You understand? So that's the whole point. It's that those who are actually, who are honest, they see it. Those who are not, don't. You know? It's just like this. The person goes to offer, he's cooked the potatoes, he goes to offer them to Krishna. You know, and then you come out and you say, yes, now take prasad, this prasad is transcendental. No, no, but you know, I know where those potatoes came from. You know, and that farmer who grew them, he's not at all Krishna conscious. These can't be spiritual potatoes. You understand? That's what's happening. That's what we're talking about. It's that childish. Does that make sense? It may not be pleasant, but, you know, since we're on the topic of direct, we're mentioning it directly. The point is that it's not, the copper wire is as good as electricity. Say what you want. Oh, no, that can't carry anything. That has nothing to do with electricity. Go ahead, grab onto it, see what happens. You know? The iron's in fire. No, but it's still iron. I know that piece of iron. It was sitting in our drawer for so long, and now you say it's fire. Go ahead. Hold it in your hand. That's the whole thing. Is that the honest, they accept it. Those who don't, don't. Now, of course, no, but then they'll misuse it. So that's, you have to work with that. That's what association, that's what training is for. But the misuse is not the good part. The good part is what's working. Does this make sense? Yeah. So we have to be very, very careful with these things. So that's the point, the direct and indirect. And those who are real devotees, they accept this. Yes, Guru is exactly representative of Krishna, mercy representation. So he's representing the mercy of Krishna. That's the whole point. Right? Not that he stands there with a flute and all this stuff. Right? It's mercy incarnation. It's the Lord's mercy goes through these devotees. That's just the way it is. Srimad Bhagavatam class, Los Angeles, 2nd October 1972. So I think in this case, paroksha means that which is heard. Because on the levels of consciousness, paroksha is what you hear from others. Right? Aparoksha is what's not, what's experienced. But this is a way of getting off. So here's the transcendental. Right? You hear from authority. Right? Well, gossip, you also hear from authority. Right? You know, the gossip queen of the community. Right? You know, like that. Oh, I heard it on Facebook.
Right, so that's authority, right? You know, so. In Chaturshloki Bhagavata, Bhagavata 2, okay, Srimad Bhagavata 2.8.34 in purport, we are warned of reflective personalities who, according to that verse, act as agents of Maya by reflecting light in a way that does not lead to the Lord, but misleads us deeper and deeper into darkness. Srila Prabhupada comments, therefore, one has to take shelter of the light of the Lord, as in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, and not the reflective personalities who have no touch with the Lord. No one should hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam from a person who does not believe in the existence of the Lord. Such a person is already doomed, and any association with such a doomed person makes the associator also doomed. So in other words, the so-called... So that's why the point of bona fide sampradaya. If they're not in the sampradaya, then there's nothing really to gain. Right? Other than if you're applying the knowledge of how you say, what you've heard from authority, and then someone makes a comment, then one can understand that in that connection. But one doesn't take them as the source of the knowledge. Does that make sense? By the term reflective personality, Srila Prabhupada points to a word that Sri Krishna uses twice in verse 34. That word is pratyeta, one who appears to be the light of the Lord. In spelling and pronunciation, pratyeta is similar to the word pratibha. However, they are worlds apart. Krishna is a linguist of all wonderful languages. He is a truthful and very pleasing speaker. He is expert in speaking, and he is a very wise, learned scholar and a genius. CC Madhya Lila 2371. All, you know, his ability to speak and understand. These are all of the 64 qualities. The word pratibha means ingenuity. Pratibhara means something or someone who exhibits ingenuity. And pratibhavita, as we see in this verse cited above, means the original genius from which all ingenuity emanates. All these words glorify the original self-effulgent brilliance of the Lord's own consciousness before which Maya is powerless. Therefore, as famously declared, Krishna Suryasama Maya Hoy Adhikar, Jaha Krishna Taha Nahi Mayar Adhikar. In an oft-quoted Brahma Samhita verse, Srimati Radharani and the Gopis are termed Pratibhavitabhi, which means that at every second, Prati, they are engrossed in Bhavitabhi, the Lord's internal Chinmaya consciousness, which is not only ever untouched by illusion, but is of the nature of Ananda, and as such, ever seeks rasa. Great devotees like Maharaj Pariksit, whom the Bhagavata describes as Manishinam, or blessed with ingenuity, are able to distinguish between the transcendental dealings of the Lord with his intimate associates and on one hand, and mundane affairs involving lusty pretenders on the other. So he's pointing out is that they're using their intelligence, their endeavor, everything, but one is using it in connection with Krishna, while one is not. In the material world, people are using their ingenuity, but how to simply enjoy this world, while the others are using it the other way. Right? In the spiritual world, they're using the ingenuity how to please Krishna. Right? Right? This treasured ingenuity of great souls by which they distinguish between what is Krishna and not Krishna is at the heart of the directive of verse 36. Avyaya vyatireka ukti. One should serve the Lord directly and indirectly. The direct understanding, the unmistakable order of Sri Guru is worship of Krishna. The indirect understanding requires us to not worship anyone else than Krishna. Right? Because what is the indirect? The indirect means those things in which you wouldn't worship Krishna, but now you see them in connection to Krishna. This in turn requires us a grasp of paroksha artha, knowledge of truths that are not necessarily explicit. Krishna declares that this knowledge satisfied him. Paroksha vad
Rishaya Paroksham Mamacha Priyam. The Vedic seers and mantras deal in esoteric terms, and I also am pleased by such confidential descriptions. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.21.35. Footnote 40. Jiva Goswami gives an alternative meaning of this verse in his Priti Sandarbha. The wise tell my secret. This secret is very dear to me. Right, so it means I'm pleased by the confidential descriptions, means the wise, they discuss this. So that's pleasing to Krishna. So now here we're seeing is that that paroksha, what we hear, but what we're hearing is the esoteric. Right? Persons whom Bhagavatam 4.31.21 describe as ku manishinam cannot distinguish between what is Krishna and non-Krishna, even though they follow the direct order by offering worship to him, which he refuses to accept because the vision is polluted. The ku manishina are called asadrisho, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.17.20. They perceive the Lord to be prati-bhati mayaya, under the influence of maya. They dare to preach their polluted vision to others. They are pratiyeta, mere reflections in darkness. Reflection of what? Of pratibha, personalities who dwell in the light of the Lord. Right, so I'm not sure. He just knew language. Yeah, he was like a real... Yeah, real Gandharva. He knew the grammar, he knew... He was one of the few who could write for BTG. He was, you know, that good of a writer. Verse 36 is the conclusion in Chatushloki Bhagavat of the Lord's revelation that there is but one deity of the absolute truth, and that deity is none other than Krishna himself. The word the Lord uses here for that divine secret is tattva. Of course, tattva literally means the absolute truth, just as Srila Prabhupada so translates it. But in verse 36, Krishna follows tattva with the word jigyasyam. Tattva is something to be searched for. Hence, until it is found, tattva remains a secret. Footnote 41. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31, Krishna tells Brahma, Jnanam param guhyam me. In Bhagavad Gita 9.2, he tells Arjuna, the supreme tattva is Raja Guhyam. And in C.C. Madhya Lila 8.2.89, Lord Chaitanya tells Sri Ramananda Rai, it is Gupta. Right? So tattva is something to be searched after. Right? So searching after up to this means up to the personality of Godhead, who is the supreme secret of all secrets. How Krishna has entered into everything, that's the secret. How he is the person is beyond all that, that's the secret of all secrets. Because that's the place where many understand how God has entered the creation. And he is in control of the creation. But very few can understand how simultaneously he's beyond. So that's the secret of all secrets. To bring the secret of all secrets to light is not no easy quest. For as Sri Krishna instructs Bhama, etavad eva jigyasyam, inquiring into the absolute truth must be truly sincere. Right? So it's not an academic effort. That's the whole point. So anybody can know the supreme absolute truth. But that means they have to be sincere, because it's revealed. So it's not how much brains you have, it's how much sincerity you have. Right? The word eva, certainly serving as the indicator of what Krishna orders, considers sincere inquiry. So certainly it must be sincere. The tremendous significance in the Chatushloki of eva, which can also be taken to mean undoubtedly, a synonym for certainly, is unquestionable, since verse 36 is the second of the four seed verses in which Lord Krishna uses the word. The first time in verse 33, Krishna asserts it immediately after the word aham. His doing this makes one point patently obvious. Krishna intends for aham in the first use of the Chatushloki and etavad up to this in the last to mean the same thing. 42. According to the standard rules for interpretation of Vedic texts, Tatparya Lingam, one should pay special attention to the statements at the beginning and at the end. Right? And also, then here, he brought out, here's another one, that's what's repeated. So at the beginning he says this, and then at the end he says this. So therefore there's something special in between. And its juxtaposition in the Chatushloki Bhagavat with words of immense import, words that refer to God himself, shows Eva to be Krishna's own marker, a point of reference, against which a jigyasu inquiry is to be judged, sincere or not. Right? So it means how much it is that you're, that this is, if you have no doubts, this is exactly what should be done, then that's sincere. Right? If one's thinking, well, we could be this, it could be so many other things, that's not sincere. Right? So, where it first appears, to reinforce the word aham, Eva stresses that aham means Krishna only. Certainly I, or without doubt I, Sri Krishna, am Sat Asat Param, the supreme, beyond all cause and effect. I certainly, doubtlessly am the absolute truth, the cause of all causes, and therefore all there is, past, present, and future. In verse 36, Eva reinforces the word Etavad, up to this, which refers to all that Lord Krishna instructs Brahmadeva in this chapter 9. This chapter that makes us privy to the ultimate hermeneutics of Vedic cosmogony. Always comes out with something good, right? In 36 purport, Srila Prabhupada specifically takes note of the twofold appearance of Eva. The Vedanta Sutra philosophy begins with this inquiry about life, and the Bhagavatam answers such inquiries up to this point, or the mystery of all inquiries. Lord Brahma wanted to be perfectly educated by the personality of Godhead, and here is the answer by the Lord, finished in four nutshell verses, from Aham Eva to this verse, Etad Eva. This is the end of all self-realization processes. Men do not know that the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to being bewildered by the glaring reflection in the darkness. And as such, everyone is entering into the darkest region of material existence, driven by the uncontrolled senses. The whole material existence is sprung up because of sense gratification, desires based principally on the sex desire. And the result is that, in spite of all advancement of knowledge, the final goal of all activities of the living entities is sense gratification. But here is the real goal of life, and everyone should know it by inquiries put before a bona fide spiritual master, expert in the science of bhakti yoga, or from the living personality of Bhagavatam life. So here, Prabhupada has used these two, aham eva to etavad eva. Right. So now here's the advantage of reading the word for word, is that then you catch the significance of the words. Then you're able to appreciate what Prabhupada's done here. Otherwise, it's just something we'll read, well, just using it as reference. So I mean, starting here and ending here. But he's showing that this means all the end of all self-realization process means these four verses. Because this is what certainly must be understood. This certainly is the Lord, and this certainly what must be understood. Right? How the Lord is everything. Right? And how he's different as a person. Right? And then again, he's bringing out this point, is that so one here, so that is tattva. And that's what you hear then from the bona fide representative. Right? Okay. Now, that what in detail comprises sincere inquiring to the absolute truth? Srila Prabhupada states here, quote, the Vedanta Sutra philosophy begins with this inquiry about life. He goes on to elaborate about the Vedanta standard of inquiry. In a Bhagavad Gita lecture given in Bombay, 29 September 1973, Srila Prabhupada speaks of sincere inquiry in a way that serves up the very essence of the passage from 36 purport quoted above. Ahara nidra bhayam maitunam chasma samanyam, etat pashubhir naranam. These demands of the body, eating, sleeping, sex life, and defense, that is there in animal life. Then where is the difference between the animal life and the human life? Unless you become inquisitive to know, atato brahma jigyasa. Therefore, Vedanta Sutra says that this life is meant for inquiring about the absolute truth, tattva jigyasa, jivasya tattva jigyasa. Right, so that's, in other words, he's catching these words, these points that Prabhupada's making. And that's what he's bringing out. So what's been mentioned up before, all the things, is what he's bringing out in these verses here, these purports. Okay. Success, and then the search for the absolute truth, is characterized by knowing him to be mani shita nubhavo yam mama loka valokanam. In verse 22, it makes very clear, manishita, ingenuity, is an absolute prerequisite for sincere inquiry. As we know from Srila Sukadeva Goswami in verse 1 of chapter 3 of this canto, where he praises Maharaj Purkit for asking questions worthy of manushyeshu manishinam, the most intelligent among men. To know Brahman, the realm of mama loka loka kanam, my personal abodes. The Lord says in the same verse that one must be blessed with anubhava, spiritual perception. Srila Sutta Goswami, speaking in chapter 4 of this verse, of this canto, verses 3 and 4, states that Maharaj Purkit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami in the spirit of Krishna anubhava, meaning that he has asked questions and heard the answers of Sukadeva. Purkit was wrapped in thoughts of Krishna only. Turning again to verse 22 of chapter 9, we find that the Lord expresses satisfaction with the quality of Brahma's hearing of the answers Krishna gave in response to his intelligent inquiries. Brahma pleased Krishna by his full surrender, evinced by his unwavering tapasya. In the next verse, Sri Krishna reveals himself to be the source of the occult syllables tapa tapa that amounted to his personal order that Brahma take up sincere Brahma jigyasya. The Lord then declares that he and penance are non-different. Hence the instruction tapa tapa that Brahma took up by fixing his concentration upon transcendental sound vibration as he sat upon his lotus throne in yogic trance is verily itself a form of the absolute truth and was praised as such by Sri Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada explains in the Reservoir of Pleasure. So his following the order is as good as. Right? This is the element. The order is as good as the Supreme Lord. Because, so he is devotional service. He's the goal of devotional service. Right? The elements we use in devotional service to him. So that means he is everything. So now the difference is here, he enters everything through his potency and makes it work. In the spiritual world, then it's, how you say, imbued with his qualities, and that's the attractive feature that everyone uses everything in his service, because they're thinking of him. When they see something, they think, I could use this for Krishna and please him in this way. Does that make sense? So you see what they're doing? I see something. Okay, I see some milk, so that could be boiled and make into some nice sweets to please Krishna, right? So what are you doing is you're getting Krishna's pleasure and you're taking an activity and some ingredients, right? So we're seeing these ingredients and thinking of the activity that will bring us pleasure. So the first thing we're doing then is seeing how is Krishna's potency. What we're looking for in that pleasure is Krishna, right? And he's the act of cooking, he is the act of all these different things that can happen. How the material energy can be brought together and separated. Right? He's actually that. So he's the intelligence, he's the acceptance of your technique, he's the mind. Does that make sense? So he is all these things. And so therefore, it takes it away from us and makes it about him. Right? So it's the same thing, it's just that they're starting with, they want to please Krishna, and they look for opportunities. While we're looking for opportunities, then we turn it around to please Krishna. Does that make sense? like that. So that's why it's useful, this element of understanding the universal form, because useful, because it's doing the same things that they do in the spiritual world. It's just that they're starting from love, we're not starting from love. So they start from love and then come down into the practical. We start with the practical and try to bring it up to love. Is that something? Yes.
I don't see the connection to the universal form.
The universal form is that he is the cooking process, he is the ingredients, he is the quality that we're looking for in that particular taste. You know, let's say it'll be sweet, so then the sweetness, what is gained from that, the nourishment, everything, then that's Krishna. So, in other words, here we take it apart. So, by taking it apart, it loses interest for us. Then we put it back together, connected to Krishna. Right? But there they start out how to do something for Krishna. And then they take it apart to apply the mechanics. Right? And their mechanics are applied properly because it will be used for Krishna. But here, if we don't take it apart, we won't use it for Krishna. Right? But by taking it apart, then the mechanics become obvious, then we can use it nicely for Krishna. Does that make sense?
Why would they take it apart?
Well, because you have to break it down into what you're going to do. You know, if I do this, it'll do this. But they're already just seeing it in connection to Krishna. So in other words, the whole process, there's nothing wrong with that people have activities and have relationships and all things and all that. The problem is here, we consider it all separate from Krishna. We don't see it as how to please Krishna better. Does that sound sense? Yes.
So can we say that the residents, the spiritual world, they only see Krishna as Prayojana, but from when we start from here, we see it from Sambandha, and then we develop it like that.
Yeah, you could say. Because otherwise we see Prayojana as our, as Mama, right?
Yeah.
You know? And then the I is also. So we're switching the Sambandha Jnana from I am the Lord to I am servant.
And
so, yeah, so naturally then, yeah, and Krishna's Lord. So then naturally, then that means that because it, I, then there's such a sense as mine. I mean, how can it be mine if there's no I? Right? So there has to be I, then there's mine. So then, if I switch the I, naturally I have to switch the mind. Like that. So that's... Okay, then... As Srila Prabhupada explains in The Reservoir of Pleasure, we are in the habit of saying that God is omnipotent. Omnipotence means that he is not different from his name, form, his qualities, from his pastimes, from his instruction. Therefore, the discussion of Bhagavad Gita is as good as discussion with Krishna himself. Thus, well before the Lord spoke the concluding verse of the Chaturshloki, well, this is a big one. Thus, well before the Lord spoke the concluding verse of the Chaturshloki Bhagavata, Brahma was already endowed with the essential qualifications for success in Brahma Jigyasa. Moreover, he had practically achieved liberation in the Absolute Truth by his darshan of the Lord in Vaikuntha. Yet, in verse 36, Krishna brings up once again matters that concern Tattva-jnanam, Brahma-jnanam, and Jivasya-jigyasya. Why does the Lord go over subjects already so well covered in earlier chapters? Read verse 36. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, in both direct and indirectly. Is the Lord unveiling new knowledge to Brahma? Information that had been hidden for eons in some unseen tomb of specially selected Bhagavatam shlokas, unseen by any sage until Krishna spoke Srimad Bhagavatam 2936. No way. Veda Garbha Brahma certainly knew all the Shastra. What does take place is that the Lord interprets in the light of even more confidential knowledge the Shastra the Brahma already has at hand. Right, so he's bringing out a more confidential. So that's the thing about it, it's so perfect that it's already perfect, you already have knowledge, and then it can become more perfect. Right? That's the nice thing about it.
What's more perfect in this verse?
more perfect.
What is it that is more perfect in this specific verse than we didn't reveal before?
You're bringing out he's established that he is there before the creation. The mechanical creation. Then there's our interaction with it. What will that be based on? Right? Our values, our desires. So that means he's that also. So what we're looking for is him. Right? We're thinking we're looking for something else. Like the person's, what does he want in life? What's his goal? What he's looking for is Krishna. And the person who's found it, they've found what they is Krishna, but they don't know is Krishna. So then you have this element of then trying to deal. And you have that aspect. Then he is all this, but he's beyond as a person. So it's about pleasing him as a person that's important. Not just that Shastra says you can do this or should do this or shouldn't do that. It's about why not? Because Krishna as a person, that's how he likes it. So in other words, not that it's just in line with Shastra. That's good. But it's more as in line with Shastra that pleases him as a person. That's what's beyond. Right? So now he's saying that all times, all places, all circumstances, you can look for this. You can find this. You should see like this. Right? So it's always about getting to that person. Because before that, you were generally talking about the Supreme, the Absolute, how he's one, how he's different, all these different... Does that make sense? Yes, but then there's it's the aspect that he's a person, right? Because the simultaneous one and difference, that's unique. Because there's one, there's difference, but the one and difference, that's unique. But then he's a person beyond all that, right? Because that's the point. He is all that, but at the same time, he's a person beyond all that. That's the specialness. Because the reason that you do it, not because it's pure or it's recommended or it's purifying or it's what Shastra says or it's pious or it's the right thing to do, but it's because it pleases Krishna, the person. That's ultimately, that's what we're saying. Mother Yashoda looks at an opportunity to please Krishna as a person. Then she looks at the mechanics to do it. Right? Well, we start with the mechanics on a good day. And then we have to try to convert that into connecting it to Krishna. Right? So that's why Krishna says, Sarva Dharma Parityaja. Now, if I'm going to connect that, I start with the mechanics. What is that mechanics?
Religion.
Okay. Now, I'm starting with that, with religion. Then I'm connecting it to Krishna. So Krishna said, give up all forms of religion and just surrender to Him. Right? So, why am I dealing with religion? Why would I need to give up all religion?
We're dealing with religion because we have no affection.
Yes, because we don't have any affection for Krishna. So we're dealing with religion because that's what we identify with. That's what we see will benefit. That's the I and the mind.
Well, why don't we see it as a form? Because to please somebody we don't know yet, we have to know in some ways how it's recommended.
Yes, no, form is there. But then the thing is then there's qualities. Then there's pastimes. Then there's the significance of the Dom, his associates, his paraphernalia. Because even when we hear the pastimes, it's all about Krishna. Krishna's so wonderful. But we don't necessarily think Mother Yashoda is wonderful, or the Cowherd boys are wonderful. You know what I'm saying? Or that the Dom is wonderful. We accept Krishna's wonderful. So therefore, we accept pastimes, but then everything else connected with that, and that. So that's why it keeps going. Yeah. So it's a natural progression. So form is there. That's why we're explaining about the form. But what I'm meaning is giving up all religion means we're giving up the viewing of things in this world, even though it's in connection with Him, but it's based on our view of the world through our religion, as opposed to it's just based on love of Him, and then according to the situation, then we look at the religious value. Right? So all elements are there, it's just which way you put it together. Because there's a difference in effect. If you put If you're cooking and you put one ingredient first and then you put the other, or you reverse it, you get different effects. So the point is that prema, the effect is you start with Krishna. Right? The mechanics of how we elevate ourselves in that, then that's we're starting with religion. Because for us to start with a religion, that's a step up. You know, because for us, if we could get by with irreligion, we take it, you know. So therefore, to just accept religion, that this is what I'm supposed to do, this is how it's supposed to work, then that's already an elevated platform. That's pious, that's human, that's brahminical. But even that has to be given up because it's about love for Krishna. Now that same brahminical standard of application and knowledge will be used because that's the technique. But the point is, it's not technique then Krishna, it's Krishna then. It's like, I want to please Krishna. I look around for technique. Right? But in the material world, I want to please myself. So I'm looking around for technique. Having found the technique, then I remember, no, I have to connect this technique to Krishna. So we're using the same principle. You start with whoever you love the most, you're looking for a technique to please them. Right? But then Krishna's not in it in the material world. Well, there, that technique is perfect because it's already starting with Krishna. Right? So we give up an attachment to ourselves because of breaking it down by technique. And then from technique, we take it up to Krishna. So in practice, then we can become like the residents of the spiritual world who start with Krishna and then apply technique. Does that make sense?
Yeah. All right. So in one sense, we can say in the spiritual world, practice of Krishna consciousness is very natural and easy because everybody is doing that.
Yes, yes.
And in the material world, it's very difficult because everybody is looking for the technique to please themselves, and then we caught up in the whole...
Yes. But the difference that we have to learn is not so much a change in the technique. I mean, we only have to change the technique if we're having to switch from, you know, things like malecha to, you know, human, like that. But even then, the principles are all the same. So it's not the mechanics that is the problem. It's the mentality. Right? So the... On one sense, because the mechanics are the same, means if I'm doing something devotionally or not devotionally, the mechanics of it are the same. So all I have to do is change my consciousness. That means no one else around me really necessarily has to know. So I can still look like I'm doing everything like everybody else is doing. Right? Why do we obviously do things differently?
To convince
ourselves? And also, it convinces others. It's just like this. If I'm doing something different, right, and I'm happy, then people want to know what's going on. There's something different about this guy. It's not just, okay, he's happy. Why is he happy? No one else is happy. You know, he's dressed different, he acts different, he eats different, everything's different. So then it's a matter of inquiry, because that's where spiritual life starts. But if you look like everybody else, no one's going to inquire. You look different, people inquire. That's the advantage. You know, someone could say, well, then we could dress up as, you know, Bozo the Clown. He would definitely look different. But the whole thing is that's not recommended by the Acharyas. Definitely people will say, who's this guy? Okay. No one need object to the word interprets as employed by the study guide, for the interpretation is done by the Lord Himself. Verse 36 is Krishna's own hermeneutic circle, to use a phrase from the modern philosophy of language. In a hermeneutic circle, an interplay is set into motion between the parts of knowledge, the facts and figures, and the knower's evolving realization of the whole of knowledge. Right? Because the circle is, I hear, I contemplate, I practice. That gives me more understanding of the knowledge which I contemplate and I practice. Right? So it's a circle. It's a cycle. The whole of knowledge does not merely mean all the facts and figures, nor does it mean updated and modernized facts and figures, nor even getting more practical use out of them than ever before, right? Because there you're only using hearing or facts and figures, and then the application, there's no contemplation, right? Because that's where the hermeneutic aspect comes in. Then what is meant by the whole of knowledge? It is the meaning of meanings, the why behind the hows, the ontology above epistemology, the taste of a fruitcake beyond its recipe, or as poetess Emily Dickinson, okay, 1831 to 1836, so deftly put it. The world is not conclusion. A species stands beyond. Invisible is music, but positive is sound. It beckons and it baffles. Philosophy don't know. And through a riddle at the last, sagacity must go. To guess it, puzzled scholars must gesture from the pulpit. Strong hallelujahs roll. Narcotics cannot still the tooth that nibbles at the soul. Oh, no, everyone's heard this one, right? No? Okay. So not only he's heard this, he even knows who said it and when they know. Even if he did, it's that he's only looking up something he's already read. Okay, where is... Oh, here. To guess it, puzzled scholars, footnote 43. Miss Dickinson brings her intriguing poem to an end by reminding us that formal worship of the Lord may be an ostentatious ploy on the part of the complacent souls wish only to numb themselves to the Lord's hidden agenda of awakening in parts and parcels from the sleep of Maya. Right? Means... the idea is to wake up, but people don't want to wake up. They just want to come and something pleasant and nice and be able to dress well and chit-chat and, you know, talk about the kids or how's business and that's it. Okay, so does that mean, it means you have the technique, but what's beyond that? So that's what we're meaning. You have the technique, but beyond that's Krishna's, the goal. So, as you said, they already start with Krishna as the goal because it's love for Krishna. Then they look at the situation. Right? So therefore, because it's love for Krishna and Braj, therefore the situation is perfect for Krishna and Braj. Therefore, that Krishna, that mood of Krishna, I mean, so Krishna and Braj being the highest, that means as the place, the Dham is also the highest. Right? Because if Krishna is as God, then the paraphernalia and the situations that you can serve him as God are therefore, you know, nicely matched. Right? So that requires one level, but when he as a person is based on the sweetness and all that, and these simple little things, not the great grandness of it, then the detail that's there in Braj will be so much more. Does that make sense? Read Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 36 with great care. You'll find the interplay between the implicit and the explicit to be central to its message. For example, Srila Prabhupada cites Garuda Purana. Even though one may have gone to the other side of all the Vedas, and even though one is well versed in all the revealed scriptures, if one is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, he must be considered the lowest of mankind. Okay? So here, how are we getting this lowest of mankind? Because we generally take the Muda as the... he's the grossest. So what's the indication of the lowest of mankind?
Maya.
Yeah. Though even there. Yeah, but it's the point is he's educated, but he does not see it in connection to Krishna. That's the lowest. The Muda is, you could say, the grossest, not the lowest. Because the Muda, how many people does he take down with him? Yeah, basically himself, maybe one or two, you know, pals at the pub. But basically, you know, nobody. But the Naradhamma, he can take a whole bunch down because he's sophisticated. He talks well. He's knowledgeable. So it has to be very careful.
The explicit parts of knowledge are all the Vedas and the verses of the scriptures. The implicit whole of knowledge is the Supreme Lord. Right? So what you can see is the Veda itself, but what you're trying to gain, the implicit, that's the Lord. The evolving realization of that whole is experienced in a state of non-difference from Him via devotional service. Therefore, the difference, the oneness, right? So, you're going to, through devotional service, then that will evolve, right? So that evolving, that's that hermeneutic cycle. Is that you've heard, you contemplate, you apply, you get further realization, so you see more and more how the verses are talking about Krishna, right? So Krishna is the person. As Srila Prabhupada explains here, the interplay between the parts and the whole is the supreme endeavor of humanity. Everyone is engaged in various kinds of scriptural inquiries, but the Srimad Bhagavatam gives answers to all of the various students of self-realization. This ultimate object of life is not to be searched out without great labor or perseverance. Right, so everyone's looking for answers. Bhagavatam gives the answers, but this is not found without endeavor. Without, you know, so we must search it out with great labor or perseverance. So here, great means it continues. Not that it's a big, that it continues. That's big. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada makes plain that the great labor and perseverance mentioned here manifest not as vain academicism. I have no idea. We need some. We're missing our. We have our German expert. We're missing our English expert. But as the submissiveness of a disciple to the bona fide source of the whole of knowledge. The Lord is not to be found simply by education or by a good fertile brain, but surely He can be found by the sincere student through the transparent medium of the bona fide spiritual master. So that's why I said someone who has that complete faith in Guru and Krishna, then all the imports of the Veda are revealed. Right? Because otherwise one can read the whole Veda. It says go to the other side of the Veda. That means one has studied them all. Right? So, but one does not know the Lord. He knows the Lord because of having that faith in Guru and Krishna. Then he will. Srila Prabhupada then demonstrates that Tattva Jnana is one with and different from Abhideya. Direct engagement in pure devotional activity. That is why he states, the revealed scriptures give directions directly to this end, but because the bewildered living entities are blinded by the glaring reflection in the darkness, they are unable to find the truth of the revealed scriptures. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, the whole direction is targeted towards the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. But for want of a bona fide spiritual master in the line of Brahmaji, or the direct hearer, Arjuna, there are different distortions of the revealed knowledge by many unauthorized persons who just want to satisfy their own whims. So even though they're studying, it's still different. So even you're doing the devotional activity, if it's not in line with the bona fide spiritual master coming in parampara, it's not actually going to give the results. It's not technically devotional service. That's why the smarta Vaishnavas aren't technically Vaishnavas, right? Because they follow all the rules, but it's not being done to please Krishna in devotion. So it's technically not actually Abhideya. Though it looks like the same thing we do.
That's why the internet is very scary, isn't it? Because you can just punch anything in to get an answer. And if you don't really know what it's coming for, you
study it, you know what I mean? You're like Googling. But isn't that the authority? Google's not the authority. And then he has certain, you know, then has other, you know, how you say, assistants, you know, who are in the authoritative line, you know, Facebook and Twitter and everybody else.
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, yeah. There's all these great authorities. Yeah, no, it's true. Because the whole thing is one has to have heard from authority to be able to interpret. In other words, the whole point is what are the hermeneutics that you will interpret whatever it is that you hear? That has to be coming in line from the bona fide spiritual master. And it has to be favorable and about Krishna, to please Krishna. That interpretation, then, you know, you can connect so many things nicely to Krishna, but without that hermeneutics, you'll end up with something else. So that's the danger. Yeah, so that's just Maya's, another trick of Maya. She's good. You have to give her credit. Right? You know, you're saying, yes, Maya, man, you know, we developed technology. Yeah, and Maya's using it. Like that. Doesn't matter.
I was just thinking that those verses establish us as bona fide Sampradaya, actually, because Krishna, you know, he's instructing the head of our Sampradaya. And yes. The scripture is Bhagavatam, so it's all there.
Mm. Yes.
And this is, if anybody challenges, then we can refer to those verses.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so that's the point. This is the hermeneutics that make it all work. Sri Krishna tells Brahma that the one truth that unifies the different parts of the Vedic knowledge, which are as variegated as the forms and features of the Virat Rup, is to be known by way of the student's ceaseless inquiry into that truth at all times. In all places and under all circumstances, directly and indirectly. By this method of devotional inquiry, the student's realization of the absolute truth evolves into love of God. Godhead, being confidentially enriched by the Lord Himself from within a heart purified by bona fide hearing. And so the ceaseless inquiry into all these aspects. Otherwise, you may only inquire into one area. That's the problem. Like, is there a problem in reading the Panchadhyaya of the Bhagavatam? No, right? So it's not a problem, but if that's all you read, and saying you don't need to read anything else, or we're on the most elevated platform because this is what we read, now that's a problem. Because where's the vichar? How's knowing Krishna from all the different angles? The Prabhupada, when you say only Prabhupada, who else do you want to hear from? Hearing from the previous acharyas, headed by Rupa Goswami, then in the sixth chapter of Nectar Devotion, in the 64 items, I think number 5 is hearing about the previous acharyas through your acharya. So that means we approach the previous acharyas by hearing from Prabhupada.
So what would be the vichara in that sense?
Means even you're reading from Vishwanath. Now, if let us say I have read something on a topic that Prabhupada has given, and then I'm reading something by Vishwanath that appears to be different. How do I interpret it? What's the hermeneutics? According to Prabhupada, then there's no problem. But if you say, well, he says this and Prabhupada says that, there's a difference here, or, you know, the tendency because he's previous acharya, take that over Prabhupada. This is not following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami.
But interpreting what we don't understand in Vishwanath is through Prabhupada, that's hermeneutics and that's vichara.
Vichara means it means you're different ways of looking at it. Prabhupada himself gives different ways, so he's already included everything the acharyas have given. Now, understanding that nicely, then you can also, he recommends reading certain literatures of the acharyas, right? You know, because you only have a limited amount of time, you know, in this life. He recommends certain literature. So, in other words, he's given. Now, the technical details are given by the acharyas. But the principles, Prabhupada's given all of them.
So all it is if you want to know or more of the detail, then this Acharya is giving that. But the principle that Acharya is giving, Prabhupada already has in his book. So now you can look at that and hear the other elements. So it's there anyway. And point is you could also, different views of vision. You have Bhagavatam, Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So these are all different ways of looking at the same thing. As we see is that, you know, every chapter is coming up with a different. So the point is to discuss those things. So it's not that just that I read it. It means hearing is one thing, then I have to contemplate and apply it. So if I hear and don't apply, I didn't really read. So it's not that I'm hearing from different views because that's vichar. No, vichar means to discuss it. And then you're going to apply with the point of application. Otherwise, why discuss it if you're not going to apply it? So thank you.